For Comics Sake on iTunes.
At For Comics Sake on Twitter.
Facebook.com/ForComicsSake.
For Comics Sake on Instagram.
Or email us ForComicsSake@yahoo.com.
For Comics Sake presents
Baby Got Bat
Issues. This podcast is rated M for mature content, not approved by the Comics Code Authority.
All right, today we're going to be talking spoilers for Batman The Killing Joke, the Deluxe Edition, writer Alan Moore, art and colors by Brian Bolin, and letterer is Richard Starkings.
Batman The Killing Joke, published in March of 1988, written by Alan Moore, art and colors by Brian Bolin, original colors by John Higgins. But this collection we're reading from, the deluxe hardcover collection, was recolored by the original penciler of the Batman Killing Joke from 1988, letters by Richard Starkings, as he said. Batman was created by Bob Kane and Bill Finger in Detective Comics number 27, May of 1939. Commissioner James Gordon, created by Bob Kane, Bill Finger, Lawrence Donovan, Henry Ralston, and John Nanovic in Detective Comics 27. So Jim Gordon was right there from the start of Batman. That's an interesting fact. The Joker was created by Bob Kane, Bill Finger, and Jerry Robinson in Batman number 1, April of 1940. So an entire year later is when the Joker showed up in a Batman story. Originally meant to be killed off in the debut issue, but editorial wanted to keep the character around, and it wasn't until Detective Comics number 168 in 1951 where he got his first origin story. So yeah, there was like almost two decades there that until he got an origin story in the comics. And the last main character of the story, Barbara Gordon, a.k.a. Batgirl, was created by Gardner Fox and Carmine Infantino in Detective Comics number 359, January of 1967. And here is the story synopsis for Batman the Killing Joke.
On a bad day, according to the grinning engine of madness and mayhem known as the Joker, that's all that separates the sane from the psychotic. Freed once again from the confines of Arkham Asylum, he's out to prove his deranged point, and he's going to use Gotham City's top cop, Commissioner Jim Gordon, and his brilliant and beautiful daughter, Barbara, to do it. Now, Batman must race to stop his arch-nemesis before his reign of terror claims two of the Dark Knight's closest friends. Can he finally put an end to the cycle of bloodlust and lunacy that links these two iconic foes before it leads to its fatal conclusion? And as the horrifying origin of the Clown Prince of Crime is finally revealed, will the thin line that separates Batman's nobility and the Joker's insanity snap once and for all?
Now, initial reactions of the story, without going into details, because we are going into it soon. This is something that's been around since 88. I did not read this until this year because of the animated movie that we both saw in the theaters.
Yes.
That's when I'm like, all right, it's always been on my long list. I'm like, this is the time I'm going to check it out. You borrowed me the copy. I later bought us these deluxe hardcovers.
Best Buy in a while.
These are
it
good.
Really is nice.
We didn't get them at Best Buy, no.
No, we did not.
Oh, okay. That's
you and your
I
jokes.
See what you say. Hey, it's a Joker story, so I must
joke
my way
joke.
Through it.
Yes.
So that was my initial reaction, was the fact that it was always on the long list. I finally read it this year, even though I've been reading comics for over like two decades now. I enjoyed on the level of it's a very important story, mm-hmm. It's a very dark story, it's a very gruesome story. It doesn't necessarily make me think that it's the best story ever told because it does have those
sure.
very serious moments, but a good story means is if something is important.
It is of very historical importance in terms of comic books.
Yes, and the continuity that happens in here reflects and just kind of barrels through what is going to be happening in later years as people refer to this as a masterpiece. That's my initial reaction. Your initial reaction?
Well, this was, when I think back to when I started reading comics, this would probably be the first five things that I ever read. I read The Watchmen almost right away. That was almost too much for me right away. I would say, I think I remember getting my first copy of this at, like, Shopko. or something like that. Like, I just saw it somewhere randomly and I grabbed it. And so I actually read this quite a while, and this is, I probably read it about 4 times now. It's not the longest story in the world.
Yeah.
And it is, for me, in terms of one contained story that has significance in terms of the DC universe going forward, it is probably one of the better things I've read in such a, in a small amount of pages. When we did The Vision, I mean, that was 5 full comic issues.
6.
Oh, 6, okay. Mm-hmm. This one is maybe 3 at the most.
Yeah.
Yeah, so...
Yeah.
But yeah, we decided to get the deluxe edition. We did go see the animated movie. And yeah, so this is going to be it here.
We're going to jump right into the story. We're going to skip any introductions and stuff like that and jump to the actual first panel.
If someone were to buy this, the deluxe edition, there is a very good introduction by writer Tim Sale that he did in 2008 that is actually worth a pretty good read.
I'm not sure how much, because he's an artist. I don't know if he's written stuff.
Okay.
Because him and Loeb and Sale have written all, like, a lot of, I got a hardcover of all their stuff.
Oh, nice. You
know,
okay.
He may have written stuff down the line, but he's predominantly known as an artist.
Okay, well, that's good to know.
So, yeah, here we go, jumping in to the comic.
So we start out here, and for me, it's pretty clear that we are outside of Arkham Asylum.
Yes.
And it's raining, and the Batmobile, pulls up. Batman jumps out. He kind of looks at, there's a police officer there, and there's somebody that hands him a cup of coffee.
Well, it's Gordon and a random Gotham police officer. Yeah.
And the first 2 pages, you have 18 total panels, and there's no dialogue in here whatsoever. And I think the artist does a really good job in still telling a story, because you see that Batman is coming to Arkham, and he passes a bunch of different prison cells. For instance, we have Harvey Dent, Two-Face, in one of them. And you see him looking out, and which I think is pretty interesting. You have someone, name unknown, which, if I'm not mistaken, I feel like that's where he might be going.
Yes.
Okay. So the police officer kind of salutes Batman.
And I'm going to notice one thing on the front desk of the lady sitting there at the reception. There's a sign for Arkham Asylum that says, "You don't have to be crazy to work here, but it helps."
Yes. So here we go. Batman enters officially the Joker's cell. And the Joker is sitting there by himself, and he's snapping a couple cards down. It looks like he's playing maybe solitaire or something. And Batman says, "Hello." He sits down. He says, "Hello, I came here to talk." Some of this dialogue, I think, is pretty important, so I am going to read some of this.
Yeah, because we will revisit it later in the story.
I've been thinking lately about you and me, about what's going to happen to us in the end. We're going to kill each other, aren't we? And Joker is not saying anything at all. "Perhaps you will kill me, perhaps I'll kill you, perhaps sooner, perhaps later. I just wanted you to know that I've made a genuine attempt to talk things over and avert that outcome. Just once." And Batman's like, "Are you even listening to me? It's life or death I'm discussing here." And Batman kind of reaches over in haste because he's really frustrated and grabs his hand. And he's like, "I don't understand why ours should be such a fatal relationship, but I don't want your murder on my hands." And Batman looks at his hands and realizes that the paint or whatever it is on this guy's body has come off and gone onto his gloves. And he reaches across, grabs his face, and this guy's like, "Hey, wait a minute, don't touch me. I've got rights. You're not allowed to touch me." And that's when Batman realizes that the guy that is sitting in front of him, who he thinks is Joker, is not Joker.
Yeah, those previous pages had him in the shadows, and you see the bright green hair and the white skin, and then once you bring him into the light, that there's one single light over their poker table there.
Yeah.
That's when you can tell, brilliant work by the artist there, tell that it's definitely not the Joker that we know, the decoys.
And, Batman's like, "Do you realize, what you've set free? Where is he?" And he's starting to get pretty handsy with this guy. And that's when Commissioner Gordon comes in. He's like, "You know the laws regarding mistreatment of inmates as well as I do."
Yeah, Gordon is, and throughout this whole story, he's all about doing things by the book.
Yep.
And when Batman's roughing up this random Joker decoy, Gordon just kind of keeps having to remind Batman, you know, to leave him alone. Even if it's a super criminal or if it's a super criminal decoy, Gordon always wants to do things by the book.
He absolutely does. So, for now, we are done inside of Arkham Asylum. We are now going to be shifting the story to what looks to be kind of like a rundown carnival slash fair.
Amusement park.
Yeah, there we go. The most obvious term, the one is the one I can't come up with. I mean, but yeah. So we have a gentleman here who is showing this amusement park to the real Joker.
Yes. And a very classic, iconic turnaround picture there.
Yes.
As Joker with a big smile and just his thin, crazy face and his flowing green hair. It is a very iconic drawing of him.
It is. But he says some pretty fucked up shit in here. He's like, well, it's garish, ugly, and derelicts have used it for a toilet. The rides are dilapidated to the point of being lethal and could easily maim or kill innocent little children. The guy's like, oh, so you don't like it? And of course he's like, don't like it? I'm crazy for it.
Yeah, all the things that would normally turn off a potential buyer is the exact things that the Joker has in mind for an amusement park.
And the gentleman wants to know, you know, oh, so the price I mentioned isn't too too steep. Joker says something like, well, are you kidding? I'm going to make a killing for it. And then we are now, the coloring changes, and we are now in kind of like a black and white tone.
And this particular, in the past, this is where the next part of the story is, with these colors is the main reason why Brian Boland came on as the colorist, because when he did the pencils originally, and the original colorist did the colors, it was specific that what we're looking at now is what it should have been in that original copy. But apparently, and I didn't revisit what the original one looks like, but Brian had talked about the fact that there was like some purples in there and there was just other colors when he meant to keep it these dark grays and you know, there's a little bit of tan in there and all that kind of stuff. And this is the colors that it was meant to be in 1988,
Interesting.
But the colorists went a different way with it.
Okay.
And that's why it was recolored for this deluxe edition.
I didn't even joke because look at what they created here.
You know? So that's that.
Interesting. I should have brought my other copy of it and we could have compared the two. That's interesting. So, we are in a flashback.
Yes.
So we get to see the Joker, how it was however many years ago.
And FYI, as we refer to this, he is pre-Joker stage, but it is very famous the fact that he is unknown, hence the title card on the Joker's cell that we just visited in the present time. So whenever we refer to this character, we have to say the Joker, even though he's not the Joker.
Yeah.
But there is literally no name to give
him. We are pre-Joker here.
Yes.
And he does have the crazy hair, so you can kind of see that he's got that going for him. But he comes home to his, assuming wife, who is pregnant.
His wife, Jeannie.
Wife Jeannie.
She has a name. He does not.
At least
for the stories.
Yeah. And she wants to know, did they like the act? And I'm like, act, you know, I remember reading this the first time, not really knowing where it was going. And it's pretty clear that he's trying to be a stand-up comedian.
Mm-hmm.
And all she says is, oh, and he fucking flips out. And she's like, what do you mean, oh? She has to try to explain herself. And he's like, oh, you said oh as in oh, so you didn't get the job? As in, oh, how are we going to feed the baby? Oh, you don't think I'm worried about that? So he gets really defensive and cocky with her right away. And then he breaks down in her lap and, you know, says, I'm sorry. And she consoles him. And he basically is having a mental breakdown because they're living in a very crummy apartment. He's talking about how the landlord sees him and judges him. They have a baby on the way. They don't have any money. It is a very depressing situation, and it is clear that pre-Joker loves his wife, has a good heart, wants to do the right thing, and wants to try to raise a family.
Yeah, and as far as the stand-up comedy act goes, he's considering himself a loser, and he is overreacting in all that sense, but all in all, she seems very calm while he's in the opposite state.
Yep.
And it just kind of shows their relationship, and hopefully things will work out for the best.
We'll see. So now we're back at the amusement park. So for now,
in the present time.
Yes. So the flashback is over. I was going to say that, by the way.
Okay.
I'm just saying. So we're back in present time in the amusement park, and we're back with the Joker and the gentleman, the realtor, whoever it is that's showing him the amusement park. This guy kind of jumps on one of those, what are those called? Those springy animal things that you can sit on and kind of swing back and forth.
They would have them in front of, like, you know, a Shopko or a supermarket. Yeah. You put a quarter in and it'll just, you know, go back and forth a little bit.
Yes.
Kind of like one of those little things.
And the guy is generally impressed that the Joker is going to be buying this place. And he's like, really, this could be one hell of a carnival. And the Joker's like, oh, you're so right. Thanks to your smooth salesmanship and your silver tongue, you've completely sold me on the place. Let's shake on it. And he kind of pats him on the back. And then when he removes his hand, you realize that he's got a little... it almost looks like a watch that the clock part would be in the palm of his hand. Only it's not a watch. There's like a almost like a needle there. So
it's almost like one of those hand shockers where you can just buzz somebody like, oh, you got me.
So he pats him on the back and it's clear the needle goes into this guy's back. Something gets, you know, into his bloodstream. And the guy, you see the guy's face and he's pretty much been murdered by the Joker because he's got this crazy Joker smile. He's got these big bloodshot eyes. And he just stays there and he doesn't move.
Yeah, so Joker was able to trick the owner into buying the park for absolutely nothing.
Yes.
And he promises the great attractions that he has in plan.
So we are now going to be at the Batcave. And we see, what do we got? We have the giant coin. We have the dinosaur.
Yeah, these objects that we continuously say we don't know why they're there. And we're waiting for a comic to tell us why.
Yes, I am refusing to look it up on the internet.
Yeah, we
do not want to know.
Get the answer, but hopefully maybe Tom King will bring some.
That would be awesome.
He needs to reference it.
So Batman is doing a little research on the Joker and trying to find some history about him. And as we know, he is unknown.
There's a great line here where he... because Batman has no clue what the Joker will ever do next. He never does. That's one of the mysteries.
Yep.
And Batman has a great line here when he says, how can two people hate so much...
hate each other so much.
Hate each other so much. Oh, yeah.
Yep.
iPad auto-corrected.
Without knowing each other. Yeah. So Alfred comes down and he brings him his tea, it looks like. They're having this conversation because he has absolutely no idea who this guy is. And he's frustrated. So then the next page, we are no longer in the Batcave. And we are now with Gordon and the new character that's being introduced in this story, Barbara Gordon.
His daughter.
His daughter, yes. So it looks like that they have some kind of a father-daughter date night every once in a while, maybe once a week. And he is always caught up in work. And she says, Dad, just once, could you leave your work at the office and relax? I made you cocoa. And he absolutely cannot. And he's talking about Batman. And he's doing some scrapbooking in terms of newspaper articles. I really like how they draw Barbara Gordon here. They do a really good job. She's just like this sweet-looking redhead. She's got glasses. She's really cute. They draw her in kind of a really innocent type way. So things pick up in this story really, really fast. Because they suddenly have company and somebody knocks at the door. And you turn the page and there he is. The Joker with a gun, and he fires it, and it shoots. It goes into Barbara Gordon, into what looks to be kind of like her lower abdomen, waist, upper thigh area. And, I mean, when I remember when I read this the first time, I absolutely did not expect that. Now, I know you said you're doing a little bit of history for this book. I would imagine at a time, you know, 1988 when this story came out, that was probably pretty dark for this era.
Yeah, once the 80s hit and you got your Dark Knight Returns and you got this stuff that, and then leading into like the Michael Keaton Batman, which is the first time we've seen a live action Batman since Adam West's 1966 Batman, the 80s was a great turning point, not only for the character of Batman and the tone of the stories, but even for comics in general, when a lot of people started to adapt to that very adult and serious tone for comic books.
Joker is not alone. He's got a couple of thugs with him. But right away, Gordon goes over to Barbara to see if she's okay. And the Joker is just helping himself to a drink. And Gordon grabs a scissors because he wants to do something. You know, he wants to defend himself, defend her. And he grabs the scissors, and one of his kind of henchmen that's with him kind of socks Gordon in the stomach, and they basically proceed to beat the shit out of him. So they carry him out, and Barbara Gordon is laying there on the ground completely helpless. And she's like, "Why are you doing this?" And Joker says, to prove a point, and he holds up a drink, and he says, "Here's to crime."
And during that whole thing, he says a lot of disturbing things of what he's doing to Barbara. He's comparing her to a damaged book. She is a librarian.
Yep.
And all of his quotes there is just awful, of all the imagery of the way he's relating what's happening to her body and what's, you know, what would happen to an old, used book. And it's some pretty...
It's pretty morbid.
Pretty sick stuff.
Yeah, it really is. So that is where we leave there. And now you turn the page, and then we are going to be in another flashback. So we're back to that black and white, dark gray, brown coloring. And we see pre-Joker sitting at a table, eating some lobster, talking to a couple guys. And what is basically happening is here is they are trying to hire him to do some sort of illegal job. They want him to break into a factory that he used to work at.
Yeah, a chemical plant.
Yes. And he really doesn't want to do it at all.
And the whole reason to break into that plant, because apparently when you're in that plant, you have access to the playing card company that's next door. I'm not sure exactly what that, like, is. Like, you know, whatever. And they don't actually get into too many details on the mission for that. But in order to do that, they track down pre-Jokers, as we're calling them, to get into that area.
But they unveil in a bag what he is going to be wearing during this kind of break-in. And it kind of... It's like, what is the best way to describe it? It's like a plain red helmet.
Yeah.
That's almost the shape of, like, if a pencil eraser was, like, a bright red, but it rounded at the top.
Think of Magneto having a baby with Baron Zemo in the Marvel Universe. Zemo's mask and Magneto's helmet. That's what this red hood looks like.
Everybody would mate in the Marvel Universe. It was up to you.
It's my fantasies.
Yeah. but they really are guilting them, because they say things like, "Listen, do you want to raise your kid in poverty?" And they're trying to use as much leverage about his personal life as they can to get this thing, to have him do this mission that they want him to do, that he doesn't want to do.
Yeah, his, with the baby on the way and all the problems we've seen in that first flashback scene, they're offering him all of the opportunities to make a family that him and his wife both can build.
Yep. So now we are back to present day.
And before we leave that, I have one fact, because they make a reference to the Red Hood gang and the leader Red Hood and all that kind of stuff. Red Hood first appeared in Detective Comics number 168 in 1951. The leader of the Red Hood gang was the man later known as the Joker. In this, when they gave Joker his origin story, he was the Red Hood. That's a fact I didn't know until I looked up.
The only reason I knew that is because in the New 52, one of the very first Batman issues was that Red Hood gang.
Okay.
So I did know that, but the fact that you told me about issue 139, that blows my mind, because I did not realize the Red Hood... Or 168, I'm sorry. I didn't realize how old that really was. I thought that was more of a recent story.
Yeah.
And, I did not know. And that's interesting.
And in this current Killing Joke version, the Red Hood is supposedly someone else, a gangster, who they make Joker dress up to pull off this crime because...
Kind of using him as... They're using crimes that have been already happening.
Yeah.
Kind of, they're like using that to their advantage.
This comic proves that there are multiple versions of the Joker's origin. So, in the original origin, in timeline-wise, Joker was the Red Hood. In this one, a Red Hood exists, and the pre-Joker is being led to...
Yeah.
You know, pass off as him in disguise. So that's I never knew much about Red Hood, and it was cool getting those facts there. So
we are now at present time, and Barbara Gordon is in the hospital, so she did not die. Batman goes to see her, and there is somebody there with him. I gotta try to remember who that is. Is that
probably Bullock?
Yeah, okay, I think that's Bullock.
I don't think they actually refer to him in here, but knowing the appearance, he's always smoking a cigar and stuff. But he's always looking wrangled and beat up and overpaid or underpaid and overtime.
Yeah, right. So anyways, she kind of wakes up and she's like, Bruce, they took my dad. And they have no... Yeah, she has no idea what happened.
And the doctor had told Batman that... The bullet had went through her spine, she lost the use of her legs, and then leads into the dad thing and ends on a great, like, crushing the Joker card there. Just what Batman, you know. I wonder how many times Batman has crushed a Joker playing card.
Probably like every other day, I would imagine.
Yeah, I would think so, yeah. Continuity-wise, I'm sure.
He probably, when he buys his decks of cards, they're probably just all Joker cards.
Yeah, exactly. He orders them specifically on Amazon Prime.
And yeah, right.
All Joker
decks. He's got access to all that. So, this is when the story gets very Alan Moore-ish, and it is like, you literally start seeing the most fucked up shit ever. Like, I have a hard time following some of this, but you have these freaky-ass, Jokerized, bald kids that are, like, looking down at Gordon, who's laying on the ground in this field that is within this carnival.
Imagine if the Munchkins from The Wizard of Oz mated with the gargoyles from Wizard of Oz, and then they all did acid. That's what these thugs are looking like.
I like that. That's a pretty good way of describing it.
And they're at the carnival here.
And he is confused. He's like, what are you doing? And they're zapping him with like a cattle prod, and they're throwing him in. He's in this cage. They take him out of this cage, through this tent, and they're taking him somewhere, and they throw him in front of the Joker, who's sitting on top of these steps, almost kind of like a king.
Yeah, he's on his own throne.
Yeah.
Here at the carnival. He's kind of in one of those, like, kind of like a teacup type of thing, like the way he's sitting in a little...
And he wants to know, what the hell is he doing there? And the Joker responds with, you're going mad.
Leading up to his throne, it's just a big pile of, I'm assuming, it plastic
like,
babies.
Yeah, it looks like dolls. Yeah. Like, I like to think they're not fetuses.
Yeah, that may be even darker.
I don't know.
There's some themes in this comic that are meant to let the audience make up what could be happening.
Yeah.
But when it comes to that, I'm just going to say those better be plastic babies.
I like to think they are.
Yeah.
I mean, Alan Moore is pretty screwed up, but I don't know. Hopefully he's not that dark. And Gordon slowly is starting to remember what is happening. This is when the Joker, I'm trying to remember exactly what he says here. The Joker says some Joker things. That's the best way of,
You know, he's always known to do that.
Yeah, every once in a while. He says, remember, I wouldn't do that. Remembering is dangerous. I find the past such a worrying and anxious place. The past tense, I suppose you call it, So he's going through his kind of shtick with him to explain why the hell he shouldn't remember the past. And then we get another flashback. Let's see here.
The thugs are finalizing the plans for the Joker, or pre-Joker, to help him break into that chemical plant.
And during the time they are finalizing all this, there is a police officer that comes in and has to say something to the pre-Joker character. And he kind of whispers something to him, and, so anyways, he goes back to the thugs, and he goes, "My wife, she's dead, my wife." And they're like, "Gee, that's terrible, we're really sorry." Like, they don't really give a shit. And they want to be like, "But we're still down for tonight, right?" And he's like, "Tonight? But I can't do anything tonight, there's no reason anymore. Janine, she's Jeannie. Dead. Oh, sorry. Jeannie. She's dead. You don't understand." And he's like, no, I'm sorry about your wife, but it's you that don't understand." Like, he's trying to be a gangster. He's saying, "We don't really give a shit about your wife. You need to fucking do this or something bad is going to happen."
Yeah, and what's interesting, just the way the cops brought that up, I thought, like, out of all the stuff that happens in this very weird and trippy book, this is the one thing that was kind of very abrupt and weird, the fact that these cops came in and said that. They do mention that she was testing a baby bottle heater and there was an electrical short that ended up killing her. But just the delivery of the news and even the way the cops said it, they're like, "You know what, stay here, take a drink, you can come to the hospital and, you know, we'll get things sorted out." But just the way that kind of happens just kind of was like, it happened pretty quick, and maybe just with the kind of storytelling and the time period and the decade of comics and stuff like that, but it was something that just kind of happened and then you're just kind of left being like, "All right, well, okay, random cop guys that found me in a bar that just told me my wife died." But being forced into continuing on with the mission another to add on to the awfulness.
And then we get a nice singing number by the Joker. They did a really good job of this in the movie.
Okay, yeah. We're in present time.
I'm sorry. We're back in present time. And
He didn't find out his wife died and then just started singing.
Oh, yeah.
That
would be really crazy.
There is some decades in between there.
So. Yeah. But we've got Joker singing a song at the carnival. He's kind of up on these big monitors. And, yeah, there's some really crazy-ass shit that's going on. You got... Gordon is with those crazy bald baby things, and they're in like a roller coaster type car, and they're going through, and the entire time that they're going through this thing, Joker is singing this crazy ass song. And that's when up on the monitor, the really bad and like naked pictures the Joker took of his daughter Barbara come up on the screen.
Yeah.
Because you do see the Joker is wearing a big camera when he comes to shoot her. And you realize that some really, really bad pictures were taken. So we're not there anymore, but Batman is now looking for where the Joker is.
Yeah, he's been having some trouble trying to track him down since the crime was committed, since he crushed that Joker card at the hospital.
You do see kind of a famous villain that Batman is trying to find out. You know, he talks to Penguin to see where he can find out, and then they shine the bat signal, and then it looks like, it would be Bullock is there. Hands Batman a bonus brothers carnival and amusement park emit one with compliments, and the Joker's face is on there.
Now, they say Batman's the greatest detective, and he's been trying to find the Joker, and now he just gets tickets leading him to the Joker.
Yeah.
I'm going to say maybe he shouldn't be the world's greatest detective.
Maybe it's the second greatest.
It's kind of like an Oreo cookie thing where Nabisco always said, like, the world's like greatest cookie or number one favorite cookie, but then they started changing it to like America's favorite cookie. There was like a literal change on there. There was just like they must have like not won an award that year or something and taste test. And they're like, well, we're America's favorite cookie, maybe. Hopefully no one will call us out on that. But I'm calling Batman out on this. I don't think he's the world's greatest detective. Maybe the second greatest.
All right, there we
go. Dick Tracy's the world's greatest.
Oh, man, that's a... Well, now, that is something I haven't thought of in a long time. You're bringing it back.
I'll be revisiting the Dick Tracy statue that is in Naperville, because apparently that's where the creator of Dick Tracy... I don't know if it was in Naperville exactly or born around there, but when you go to Naperville, Illinois, which I do many a times for some great book signings, there's a huge statue, and when I first saw it a couple years ago, I'm like, man, that guy kind of looks like Dick Tracy. I went and read the plaque, and it said Dick Tracy, and the creator was from there. But anyways, he's, in my heart, the greatest detective. Batman, you're number two.
Well, there we go. So then we are back at the carnival. And Gordon is still going through this wild ride, and he basically has broken him down mentally. He is turning him into a pile of goo.
Yeah.
So now we're going to go back in another flashback, pre-Joker, and this is the night of the crime, and they are entering the warehouse. He can barely see out of this red mask, but... They break in, and there ends up being armored security. And he didn't know, and I guess in the joke pre-Joker's defense, he didn't know anything about it.
Yeah, it was something that was changed since he had last worked there, because they're like, hey, what's about the, oh, they must have added security.
Yeah, but they're firing, and one of the thugs for sure gets shot. And
as that's happening... That's when the thugs turn on pre-Joker immediately by yelling out like, yeah, that's the Red Hood, you know, and everyone, you know, he's dressed as the Red Hood, and right away they just, like, throw him under the bus, so to speak. So.
And then we get Batman jumping out. Now, this is in the past. Batman jumps out, and he stops the security guys from shooting, and the Red Hood decides to jump. And he falls down into, like, a big, it looks like a big chemical water
basically a big
treatment vat.
Yeah, a big vat is the terminology.
And, the water burns him, and he's like, huh. And then he starts laughing, and then we get a really famous picture of the Joker looking like a Joker with his hands in his gnarly... green hair, and there's all this laughter. So that's like at the point where he turns into the Joker.
Yeah, and it's always, no matter how you see it, whether you're watching the cartoons or live action or the several different origins of the Joker, a lot of times I think you're always led to believe the fact that there's a standoff and you know, Joker gets pushed into the vat and just like, you know, there's a fight and a struggle, and that's usually how these accident things kind of happen. As an accident, but how it's being portrayed here by Alan Moore and Brian Bolan is the fact that pre-Joker is the one that decides to jump as an escape.
Yeah.
And that's what's kind of interesting, where you can kind of, in the world of comics, always get a bunch of different versions that may not always be, you know, there's not one definite version.
Nope.
And it's interesting to see that he's the one that chose to jump over rather than being pushed or knocked or kicked over or something.
But we are now back to present day inside of the amusement park, and Commissioner Gordon is inside of kind of what looks like a jail cell, kind of, you know, I don't know, I guess that, like a square box with bars.
He's basically back in his
naked
cage.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you have the quote-unquote circus freaks surrounding him and laughing at him, and kind of calling him like a social outcast. And he is absolutely broken to, I mean, he is nothing now. And then, hopefully, our hero then shows up. We get Batman.
And a very funky-looking Batmobile, which it says, like, kind of looks like the front of, it looks like Black Panther's mobile in a way.
It looks like a really old-timey, car, like something like from the 50s or something.
It looks like
I don't really know my cars.
It looks like Alfred had a car, and then like all the like kind of like with Tom King's Batman right now, all the Batmobiles keep getting blown up and like all that kind of stuff.
So it's like it was in storage for 50 years, and he's like, all right, you know what?
Alfred, I gotta borrow your car.
Yeah, I know, and this is what
it
is.
Put a bat symbol on front of it.
Yeah, no kidding.
Let's do this shit.
Yeah, so, and then there we go. Joker and Batman are having a stare down. And you go back, and there's some foreshadowing here to the very first conversation that Batman had with the fake Joker inside of Arkham Asylum. You get the, I've been thinking lately about you, about me, about what's going to happen in the end. We're going to kill each other, aren't we? Perhaps you'll kill me, perhaps I'll kill you, perhaps sooner, perhaps later. So while this is all happening, I'm assuming Batman is thinking about this, or, you know.
Yeah, this is all like narration, inner monologue, looking back to what the beginning.
But, you know, Batman tackles Joker, and the Joker pulls out kind of like this silly spray that he sprays at Batman, and it burns him, so he has to get up right away. And then he runs away into like a mirror funhouse room. So Batman immediately goes to Jim Gordon and wants to see if he's okay. And he just breaks down in Batman's arms. I'm trying to think. Batman gets him out immediately, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, he's saving him because he's like, all right, I got to save Gordon. Yeah. But Gordon has a different thing in mind. He's telling Batman to go after the Joker.
Yep. But he wants it done by the book.
Yep.
And Batman's like, I'll do my best.
Because Gordon is very particular in saying, we have to show him our way works.
So he goes into this quote-unquote funhouse to look for the Joker. And then Joker, you don't see it yet, but he's kind of over like a PA system. And he is shouting things out at the Batman. And he's kind of saying his philosophy on life. You know, you see, it doesn't matter if you catch me and send me back to asylum. Gordon's been driven mad. I've proved my point. I've demonstrated there's no difference between me and everybody else. All it takes is one bad day to reduce the sanest man alive to lunacy. So he kind of goes on and on and on about this, and Batman is trying really hard to find him. And Joker's like, God, you make me want to puke.
Yeah, Joker is kind of speaking of his own past, the fact that that's all it took for that crazy moment. The big quote is always, one bad day.
Yeah.
That was even the hashtag for the lead-in for the animated movie release, was one bad day.
So Joker is on this microphone, and he's saying all of this stuff. And then Batman comes crashing through this mirror right in front of him. And because Joker says a little something, he goes, why aren't you laughing? That's when Batman crashes through, and he says, because I've heard it all before, and it wasn't funny the first time. And he kind of grabs him. Batman grabs Joker kind of by the collar, and he throws him through this glass. And I love how the Joker always has a little something up his sleeve to get away, like, every single damn time.
Yeah, and during all that arguing and over, like, the PA system that he was doing, Joker was he was questioning why Batman became Batman.
Yeah.
Because Joker himself cannot even remember anymore why he became Joker.
Yeah.
All of that stuff. So now he's kind of wondering how Batman ticks and how Batman got there. They both got there in their own insane way. And he's just oblivious how Batman doesn't even know how to track down Joker and all that stuff. So they're both a mystery to each other.
So there is a fight scene, and you got Joker slamming a 2x4 across Batman's head. He pulls out a knife. He goes to stab him. Batman is able to stop that. And Batman grabs him by the collar, and I'm assuming he pops him in the face. The Joker falls down, pulls out a gun. He's at point blank right at Batman. He pulls a trigger, and he realizes it's a joke gun. And the piece of paper pops out of the gun, and it says, click, click, click. And Joker's like, God damn it. It's empty. I remember this particularly. When I read this the first time, I didn't think it was very funny. Like, I think it's meant to be a joke, and I'm just like, oh, that's crazy. The Joker screwed up. Well, when we watched the movie during this scene, I remember a lot of people in the theater laughing. Mm-hmm. And I thought that was really funny, because I don't know, the first time I read it, I didn't really find it very humorous. But they did a really good job in the movie showing that.
Yeah, after seeing what, you know, he actually did with the gun the last time, so when he pulls a gun this time, you know, it's just one of those things that, you know, was it possibly the wrong gun that Joker grabbed, or was that just all part of the plan? Yeah. Because his whole mission in this whole book is to drive Gordon crazy, and
he does.
Batman assured Joker that Gordon is fine. Even after all that stuff, he was assuring him that everything he did to try to drive him mad, that none of it helped, and he actually says that maybe there's something wrong with Joker, that he's not an ordinary person, that he's not ordinary like everyone else, that he maybe is the only one capable of going mad himself.
So Joker is pretty much, what are you waiting for? I want you to beat the hell out of me. And then Batman's like, because I'm doing this one by the book, and because I don't want to. And they have a really good conversation with one another. And he is opening up. Batman opens up to the Joker. Because he's saying that, you know, we could work together. We could rehabilitate you. You needn't be out there on the edge anymore. You needn't be alone. It's not a word you hear too often.
Only from the world's second greatest detective after Dick Tracy.
We don't have to... you're going to stand by that, aren't you? And he's saying, we don't have to kill each other. What do you say? And the Joker just kind of gives him that look, and he's like, no, I'm sorry. No, it's too late for that. And the Joker says, you know, it's funny. This situation reminds me of a joke. Should we talk? Should we say that joke?
Okay, let me jump into the comic here so I can see where we are as I was going through my notes.
Yeah, no problem.
All right, so yeah, where are you looking so I can just be on the same page?
Yep, no problem.
Okay. All right.
So.
Okay.
Okay, here we go. This is, I can do it if you want, it doesn't matter.
Well, I was saying, I'm like, we could play two different roles, because one can do a Batman voice, and the other could do the Clown Prince of Crime, Mark Hamill voice.
Yeah, maybe you can do that.
Said that because I kind of wanted to do that.
Yeah, I can tell.
See, there were these two guys in a lunatic asylum. And one night, they decide they don't like living in an asylum anymore. They decide they're going to escape. So, like, they get up onto the roof, and there, just across this narrow gap, they see the rooftops on the town stretching away in the moonlight, stretching away to freedom. Now, the first guy, he jumps right across with no problem. But his friend Darrant, there's another one of those weird words. Make the leap, you see. You see, he's afraid of falling. So then, the first guy has an idea. He says, hey, I have my flashlight with me. I'll shine it across the gap between the buildings. You can walk along the beam and join me. But the second guy just shakes his head. He says, what do you think I am, crazy? You'd turn it off when I was halfway across. Oh, do excuse me.
And that is how it ends, ladies and gentlemen.
The ending has always been in question. A lot of the readers and critics and creators and everybody, it was purposely left to do that, to leave it up to the readers to decide, because people are like, there's some people that theorize that Batman snapped Joker's neck. There's some people who are like, well, they laughed it off and whatever.
Because at the very end, it almost looks like he's strangling him.
Yeah, and...
But in the movie, he kind of has his hands on his shoulders and he's bent over and laughing, almost propping himself up on Joker.
And since it's left up to the readers, my take on it is, you know, if you remove itself from continuity, because, well, you know, the Joker's always there. He dies, he lives, gets thrown in jail, all that stuff. I look at it at it in a way that they're all laughing. Batman has him, kind of making him believe that, you know, they're sharing this moment together, and then the Batman was easy enough just to knee him in the gut, yeah. take him down, put him over his shoulder, throw him in yep. Alfred's version of the Batmobile, and cruise him back to Arkham to once again do this all over again. That was my take, is that he just kind of brought him on his level, got him to that they were kind of relating, and then just
yeah.
sucker punched him and just took him back yep. to jail.
So, you know, I'll tell you, after reading it the first time, what did you think about it?
After reading it for the first time, once again, I felt every huge impact of just the stuff with Barbara, which yeah. leads to, you know, her eventually becoming Oracle yep. and just all becoming, and eventually
it gets
better.
Well, what happens is, like, she basically becomes Oracle, and yeah. she is that character forever in the DC Universe until they relaunch the New 52.
Okay, yeah.
But she is, that forever changes the scope of DC forever, because even when they relaunch their universe, Barbara Gordon becomes Batgirl again. They actually do reference this, and they talk about her rehabilitating and stuff.
Yeah, so they're not throwing it away.
But that happens, like, you're talking 88, 98, like, 25, 26 years
yeah.
after the fact. So, I mean, this changes everything.
Yeah.
So, it really does.
Yeah, so just the
then
impact.
They have other Batgirls that come and go.
And
Stephanie Brown being one of them.
Yes. And what I like about this, you know, it's one of those reads where, yeah, you can read it and appreciate it because of the, you know, just the legacy of
yeah.
it. I don't read it to be like, oh, I can't wait to read this again.
Yeah.
Just because, yeah, there is a lot of, like, you know, it's very artistic and awesome
yep.
like that, but I don't put it up in the line of, like, this is a fun read.
No, see, you know, that's a good way of saying it. I think I like it because it's one of those quote-unquote must-read books.
Yeah.
Does it make me feel all happy and jolly when I'm done reading it? Probably not. In a very short period, you get attached to Barbara Gordon, and she's only in the book for a little bit, but
yeah.
you sympathize with them as characters.
And that's what I kind of like about the animation adaptation, was because the first half hour of the movie, outside of showing us, like, the behind the scenes and the voice and all that kind of awesome stuff that came with that theatrical edition, which I'm sure are on the Blu-ray, but in the feature presentation, is that there's about a half hour of material that's not in this book
yeah.
that's made for the animated movie. Of, and it's very Barbara Gordon heavy,
oh, yep.
and that's what I kind of like, because I like her as a character, and you see more of that, whereas when you get to here, you barely get to, like, meet her and know her in the story. If
yeah.
this is your first Batman story you pick up, then
your heart is crushed immediately.
Pretty much.
yeah.
If you check out the animation, the animated version, you get a lot more, and then it hits you even harder, I think, because you're
yep.
she has a lot of humor in the book and all that kind of stuff, and she's, you know, dealing with their relationships, and she's got her, like, best friend at the library, and there's a lot of good scenes
mm-hmm.
in between there. So I like that when they adapted it, they added that bonus, but then when they actually did the comic adaptation, it was pretty, like, just word for word
yep.
and panel. Like,
yeah, it was.
They didn't change anything from that portion.
It was awesome.
But
yeah.
pre-Killing Joke material, they added all
yep.
that, but the actual Killing Joke was a...
So.
Yeah.
Well, there it is. There is Batman the Killing Joke. So that's my pick for August.
Yep, for the month of August, wrapping up Baby Got Back issues number 2. Well, once a month.
I know.
And you're excited because...
Yeah, this is going to be the reveal.
I think I have my pick, like, planned out for, like, January and February. Like, I just,
yeah,
like,
I have
where
a,
I'm going to put this stuff.
I have a pretty good guess, but I don't know for sure.
And I do, and I'm going to make you guess because I think you... I'm going to say this. I think you know where I'm going with this. So I want
okay.
you to guess, because right now, and, you know, we're coming in, we're about 55 minutes here. I'm about to release what is going to be the September pick for Baby Got Back issues. I'm going to have you guess what you think I'm thinking.
See, I'm going to guess
yes.
what you think you're thinking. And because of the fact that you think I can guess it correctly,
mm-hmm.
my guess is that you picked something different.
That's an interesting take. This could be a little Batman Joker thing, like, you know, one of us is going to win and who's going to die.
My official guess is going to be Joss Whedon's run of Amazing X-Men.
Oh, well, he didn't do Amazing X-Men, he did Astonishing X-Men. Amazing X-Men, recently, Nightcrawler story.
In Astonishing X-Men from, I 2004. Don't know 2004.
Well, because it's the month of September, and we are going to say we dropped this on the last day of the month.
Yeah.
It just so happens that the last day of this month happened to be a Comic Book Wednesday.
Okay.
So that kind of, like, was a double reveal. This one, what I'm picking, is going to be dropped on September 30th, 2016, which will be the official 11-year anniversary of the movie Serenity. So what better way to celebrate September 30th Serenity release day than with Serenity
fucking A.
Leaves on the Wind by Zach Whedon, pencils by Georges Genty, inks by Carl Story, and colors by Laura Martin. This is the comic book sequel to the movie of Serenity.
Hey, let's get a round of applause for this. I have never read this. This is exciting.
And this was originally collected in 6 issues, and this was last year, I think it was published. Oh. I bought them in the individual issues. I'll dive deeper into it for the Baby Got Back episode, but I had a letter printed in one of the issues. So I have
don't spoil it now.
I'm not.
Okay, all right.
I already said that I wasn't.
Okay.
It was in one of the issues here. So when you pick up the hardcover, you know, this is where I say go back and buy the issues too, because the hardcover doesn't have the letters in. My letter is not in the hardcover.
Okay.
This ain't some huge deluxe thing.
Man.
They got a cover gallery. But anyways, if you want more Serenity, because everyone's like, I want more Firefly, I want more Serenity, how come there's not a sequel? Didn't warrant enough money to, you know, financially make another sequel. To all those people that want more, I question if they've read this, and I recommend reading it, because this is the sequel
obviously
to the movie.
Obviously, you picked it, yeah. This is exciting. So basically, I need to watch Firefly and Serenity all over again, is what you're telling me, right?
Yeah, pretty much.
So, well, this is, that was a swerve. There's no doubt about it. So I just knew it though. I knew it wasn't going to be.
Well, it's Joss Whedon related, so there's that.
So, well, very cool. I'm looking forward to that.
So yeah, Baby Got Back issues number 3 will drop on the last day of the month for September 30th, 2016. And that is Serenity Leaves on the Wind issues 1-6, which is, that's the whole story. Also collected in probably trade paperback, but also a beautiful hardcover.
I feel like, when we do these Baby Got Back issues, it really shows the love of this medium that we have.
Yeah.
It really does. I mean, we can talk about the weekly issues, and that's a lot of fun, but when we talk about passionately about one contained story, it really shows the reason that we do this.
Which is,
for comics' sake. For Comic's Sake on iTunes.
At For Comic's Sake on Twitter.
Facebook.com/ForComicsSake.
For Comic's Sake on Instagram.
Or email us ForComicsSake@yahoo.com.
Music by Bicycle vs. Motor Vehicle. Please visit them online, SoundCloud.com/BVSMV, as well as BVSMV.bandcamp.com.